Wir bei Vertex wissen, dass die Geschwindigkeit des globalen Handels zunimmt, was eine Steuerverwaltung komplexer macht. Und Ihre unternehmenseigenen Systeme sind nicht dafür ausgelegt, diese Steuerkomplexität zu bewältigen. Hier setzen wir mit unserer Plattform an, die Continuous Compliance ermöglicht. So erhalten Sie mehr Transparenz, mehr Genauigkeit und mehr Vertrauen in Ihre Steuerdaten. Sie wollen mehr über Continuous Compliance erfahren? Dann besuchen Sie vertexinc.com/de.
The Naked Scientist.
Time for The Naked Scientist with Dr. Chris Smith. Dr. Chris, I have to ask, as we've been talking about reading and literacy, it being the week, it being International Literacy Month and International Literacy Day being yesterday, so many parents have been writing in to speak about or ask about the challenges of why some children struggle to read. And maybe you had some latest research that might give us some insight. We do know some of the challenges can be around nutrition, how they were taught. They could be psychological. Maybe they're on the spectrum, but there's something maybe you could share around literacy.
Well, I think probably the first thing I can add is that it's not just nature and it's not just nurture. There's a whole range of factors that are involved here, but the environment is really important. And a supportive environment where literacy, books, writing, and the love of those things have got to be central. And probably one of the most important things that any parent can do with their child, regardless of what the outcome's going to be, is to read with them. And you'd be amazed how many parents do not sit down these days and read stories with their kids. You can cast your mind back to the sort of magic where you create these imaginary worlds through the words that are flowing off the page. And that is where it begins, because it's that understanding of what language can do, the wonderful pictures it can summon, where it can take you in your imagination. That starts with little kids enjoying fairy tales with their mum and dad, and it then extends to the child joining in because they learn to read because they want to be able to create the same magic for themselves. And then one thing that does do is if there is going to be a problem, it discloses itself and then you can help. And we know that the more help that a person gets, the better they are able to surmount those difficulties. So if I was going to give one piece of advice, it would be all us parents must make sure that we sit down and read with our kids. And we do it from a very early age, and we don't get absorbed into mobile phones and screens, and don't let them do that either, because you look at some families, they'll go out to dinner in restaurants and they'll have kids on tablets, the parents will be on phones, no one's having a conversation. And I drive past bus stops where children are waiting for the school bus in the morning, and they're all glued to a mobile phone, not a single one of them talking to each other. And this exchange of language is really important, and it extends into so many different aspects of life. But it starts with those very early days in the bedroom, mum and dad, the stories, those wonderful times when you have together where you can create those imaginary pictures. So that's the best piece of advice I can give. Read with your kids and have good dinner time conversations where electronic devices are banned. And this will add up to a much better grasp of language.
So we had a listener who once shared with us that he thought his father couldn't read because his father would make him read the newspapers to him every day. And then only later he discovered that his father was making him improve his reading, but also to just know what's happening in the world. But the whole time he thought his father couldn't read. And then the second thing that I think I saw somewhere that if children watch shows and content with subtitles, it improves their reading. Is that true from what you know?
I'm not sure. If it's in a foreign language, probably. I know that if you subject me to a French film, I get about one word in three and I have to then try and look at the subtitles to cheat for the other ones. If it's in a language that you're not so strong with, then definitely it's going to help, isn't it, with comprehension. And it can actually help to learn a foreign language, because you then begin to fill in the gaps yourself, and that helps you to pick up on the bits you missed, and you hear how it was said naturally by the natural speaker, and that helps you to learn how that should sound, and you recognise it the next time. Whether or not that reinforces language, I don't know. I think screens are not good for education. I'm probably committing a horrible educational crime saying this, but there are so many schools that have now gone totally overboard with electronification of everything, where it's screens this, phones that, and the kids never get a break from it. And to be honest with you, I think I've said this on this program before, there's a lot to be gained by picking up a pen and a bit of paper. using your ears and eyes and listening to what someone says and then condensing what they say into notes that you then have synthesized from those notes, your own brain's form of how it likes to process the information. And then you get processing as it goes down onto the page and processing as it comes back off the page into you in a style that your brain likes. And that's how you learn and remember stuff. It's why I remember so much stuff, because I used to take copious notes and then write them up. And I'd effectively translated one person's thought processes into my own thought processes. And you do it because your hand works at the same rate with a pen in it as your brain works at. A screen does not work at that rate, and it's not tuned to your brain in the same way. And we all hate reading text on screens. We really do. We do it because it's convenient. But if you have to read a news article or a book, you much prefer to pick up a piece of paper. We all do, actually. Most people really find they prefer to read a story from a book, not on a screen. And I think that's a reflection on that. And so my take on this is pick up a pen, pick up a bit of paper and enjoy writing and reading things. And you'll remember things much better and understand them much better that way.
Got you completely. Thank you so much, Dr. Chris Smith. Cynthia from Johannesburg, you've got a question for the doctor.
Yes, I'd be interested to know if it's true, and I don't know if it is, that after a war, more male babies are born. Is this so? And if so, how does it, you know, how does one...
So after a war, more male babies born, is it true? And why would that be the case? Interesting. Doctor?
Hi, Cynthia. I don't think the war per se causes more male babies to be born. But what I can say is that more male babies than female babies are conceived anyway. And the reason for this, number of factors, but there are probably size aspects to this, because the sperm that make a male baby are slightly lighter than the sperm that are going to make a female baby. And so they swim a little bit faster. So although there's not much in it, there's a little bit in it, enough to tip the balance. So there are more male babies conceived than female babies. So then you might say, well, if we ignore all the other health deleterious things like wars, why are there about the same number of men and women on Earth then, if we have got roughly more men being born than women? And the answer is that from every single moment since conception, the mortality rate for males is always higher than females, pretty much exclusively across the life course. So we make more males, but we lose more males. And the factors that cause us to lose more males are differing according to all stages of life. But that has the effect of driving a balance between the numbers of men and the numbers of women if you ignore the other factors that we've been talking about. So I don't think there's any evidence that a war event would drive more males to be conceived. I don't think that's true. I think more males are conceived anyway, but we lose more males because of various aspects of the way we behave, various diseases which affect one sex before the other, and so on. So it's really down to nature. It's not so much down to what we do in terms of conflict, although that has claimed the lives of millions of men over the life of the planet.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, for that question that came through. One says, hi, Rilebogile and the Naked Scientist. Please help. When I'm exposed to heat, especially the sun, and I sweat, my skin itches so much I can't even have a hot bath. I never ever had these issues. Only now, later in my life, I've tried almost without relief. Please advise on effective solutions.
Well, there are some forms almost of allergy which are linked to the temperature of skin. And it's probably bound up with the fact that the nerve fibers that signal pain and temperature in our skin are also wired up to a population of cells called mast cells, which are full of histamine. So if you activate these nerve fibers with some kind of stimulus to which they are sensitive, they can cause an allergic reaction. And there are some poor people who have what we call aquagenic urticaria. Just contact with water will make them come out in hives on their skin. There are some people with cold urticaria, where cold water, for instance, they fall in a swimming pool, they can actually die of an overwhelming release of histamine, like an anaphylaxis, because of this phenomenon. It might be that this poor person, as they've got a bit older, whatever's regulating their immune system means that they've become more sensitive to the release of histamine provoked by higher temperatures. That's one possibility. And the release of the histamine is what's making the skin in the affected areas itch.
A question on the WhatsApp line.
Doctor, please tell me as men, why do we have like we have, what can I say, is that the breast, if you can call it like that, the nipples become big. There's something very like a ball inside there. They like your breasts literally become big. Like it makes us, some of us, feel so uncomfortable with our t-shirt and stuff. Like why? Like why? How can we get rid of such a big breast if you are a man? Thank you. We really need help. Please, thank doctor.
Sorry to hear that, doctor, you're struggling a bit with that one. And you don't say how old you are, but this can become a bit more of a problem at different stages of our lives. And often it first manifests itself when people are going through puberty. And the reason it happens is that although women have bigger breasts than men, they're still the same tissue. And women's breasts grow under the influence of hormones, chiefly estrogens and also progesterone during pregnancy, because those hormones encourage the development of gland tissue in the breast and fat. Men have exactly the same anatomy, and that's why men have nipples, even though they don't generally breastfeed. Some animals do. There's a kind of bat called the dyak bat, where the male does actually breastfeed the offspring to an extent. I mean, the female does most of it, but the male does some of it. And this is testimony to that. And this is because when you're forming your body as a developing baby, the program of genes which is turning on to tell each bit of your body what to become is identical in men and women in the chest region, and it produces breast tissue. So this means that we have, as men, the same tissue with the same ability to respond to changing hormones as women do. And although it happens more in women going through pregnancy and they develop much bigger breast swellings and fat there, which gives you a typical female breast, men's breasts do that to an extent as well. And whatever gives you more hormone fluxes, that may happen to a greater extent. So if you're also carrying a bit more body weight, your own fat makes some female hormones called estrogens, and those too will act on that tissue and make it more developed. So one thing you can do is to look at your general body shape, and if your weight is a bit on the heavy side, if you slim down, this will do two things. One, it will remove some of the fat anyway, which makes things smaller, and it withdraws some of the hormone drive, which can make this so-called gynecomastia, which means enlarged breast tissue, get worse. So that might be one thing to do. If it's happening symmetrically, that's much less of a worry than if just one side has begun to change. Because one of the other things I'd like to mention is men get breast cancer as well. Obviously, it's much more common in women. About one woman in 11 or so in her lifetime will have a brush with breast cancer. It's nothing like that in men. It's much, much rarer, but it still can happen. And so if it's unilateral, one-sided only, and it's suddenly started to happen and previously not been there, you should get that looked at, definitely. Make sure that's looked at, just in case. And there are some sort of diseases that can drive the development of breast tissue under the influence of hormones, because they can make hormones go up in the body that can make breast tissue develop. So if this is a new thing and it's come out of nowhere, you should also get that looked at. But it is possible, under exceptional circumstances where this is causing great unsightliness or enormous mental problems for your own sense of self well-being, you can resort to surgery in the same way that women can have breast reduction surgery to remove some of the fat that's making it happen. So there's always something we can do. You're not suffering alone. This is very common. Most of the time, it's not any harm for anybody at all. And most people think it's more of a problem and no one else has even noticed it. So reassure yourself that you are definitely not alone. It definitely will be taken seriously if you want some help. And the first thing to do would be to go and talk to someone about it. And you've really started down that path because you've raised it here, and see if they can give you some practical tips to do simple things first and then escalate in terms of the severity of those interventions as befits whatever the cause is.
All right, thank you so much for that question. We go to Sam in Mamelodi. Sam, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Rulebo, and the doctor there. My question is, why is there only FM wave band on cell phones? That is, why is there an exclusion of short waves and medium wave bands, but only FM?
Why is there only FM, doctor?
Well, first of all, when we're talking about cell phones, which was what is being asked, they communicate with their base station using microwaves. And they use a similar frequency to Wi-Fi, actually, that you turn on in your house, which is at about 2.5 gigahertz. And there is also some 5G signals, which are at 5 gigahertz, hence the name 5G. And that can pack more data in. That's different than the wavelengths we use for traditional radio. So this program's being broadcast on the radio waves in a number of frequencies. And they are chosen to be separate from the waves that are used for the kinds of communications like mobile phones and broadband to avoid interference. Because you can only send so many signals across a certain set of wavelengths, because otherwise they start to interfere with each other. And so they closely guard and control who's broadcasting on what frequencies so that people can listen to 702 in all its glory without interruption and interference. And if you start packing too many things into the same radio spectrum, you get what they call electronic smog. And it's the radio equivalent of a foggy day or going to a really noisy room where everyone's shouting and no one can hear each other because there's so much noise, everyone drowns each other out. And that's what would happen on the radio if we all packed all the same frequencies into what we use. So we segregate different frequencies for different jobs and we try to use frequencies which are the best at doing that job. So, for instance, if we want to do radio, FM historically is one way to do that. We're now doing digital, chiefly in most countries have gone digital away from traditional FM, but that means you can pack more in. So that's why they've done that. But if you want to do a certain kind of communication over massively long distances, you'd use a different frequency than the one that would be good to send a radio program to people's cars, because it will have different characteristics that make it easier to send and receive and travel over great distances for less power than you would need for, say, radio broadcasting. So it's really horses for courses.
Thank you so much for that one. Dr. Chris, this one I know you can answer in 20 seconds or less.
I'll do my best.
Why is it that when I'm late, all the traffic lights turn red, but then when I'm too early, they just are all green?
I know, it's confirmation bias, because all the times you sailed in and the traffic lights were green and you didn't notice because you were not late, and the one time that it happens and you are late and they are red, you think, oh, this is just my luck, it always happens to me. It's like you always meet the slowest man in the world and you get stuck behind him or her on your way to work when you're always late for that crucial meeting. You don't. It's just because the one time that it does happen and it really matters, you really regret it, leaving home late, and you really notice it, so you really remember it.
Confirmation bias. Thank you so much, Dr. Christmas.